Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Is This Good? The show where we boldly, conclusively, and scientifically decide what things in this big wide world are good. I'm Matt Austin, and with me as always is production powerhouse Jason Doyle.
Hello.
Hi, JD. Thanks for coming. And today's guest is a writer who is the former editor of Deadspin and current editor and co-owner of Defector, a sports blog and media company. You've read him, you've heard him on the Distraction podcast, and if you have questionable eyesight and are bad at Googling, you've seen him do some of the world's greatest close-up coin magic. As a Canadian, I just want him to know that even I'm impressed by his collection of finely stitched flannels. It's David Roth. David, welcome to Is This
Thank
Good?
You. Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. That's a very nice intro, and I really appreciate you going with the late coin magician and not the polarizing Van Halen frontman. That's a you're already zigging where I expected you to zag.
So you would prefer for people to confuse you with the close-up coin magician.
And I think he's neat. I mean, it takes the pressure off, because it's like, if you confuse me with David Lee Roth, you'd be like, well, all right, like, shorter hair, better skincare than I recall. Like, David Roth, the coin magician, RIP, is just like an elf. And he was always wearing like a suit blazer with the sleeves rolled up. So like, I would seem, not just because I'm alive, although that helps a lot, but I would seem cooler than him if you met me in real life. And I like giving people a positive surprise where I can.
How famous do you think he is? I'm speaking of the coin man. Like, do you think you know him only because he has your name, or do you think you would have an awareness of him even if you didn't have the name?
I don't know. I think that, so I have a, I wouldn't say it's the most shameful habit that I have, but I kind of, there's a headspace that I can get into where I like watching people do magic on YouTube. Like, I'm a big Ricky J guy.
Hell yeah. You want to see a man and throw a card into a watermelon? Because I do.
Right. And this is like, that's the actual promise of the internet. Like, everything that has kind of like been eroded, where it's like, what if it was just an AI assistant that told you how to do crimes? That sucks. I don't want that. Like, what I want is to be able to put in like Ricky J throw card and like get a bunch of results, like 720p that I can just watch if I'm, I guess I don't need to say that I'm high while I'm doing this. Like, I think it's very strongly implied, but it's, that is gratifying to me, that sort of performance. And then the way that the YouTube algorithm works, if it's working, is like, that's how I found David Roth. It was not Googling myself, but they were sort of like, if you like watching this guy give like a weird windy monologue while doing a three-card Monty trick, like, you might enjoy also this Jewish homunculus making a 50-cent piece disappear three different ways. And they were right. I mean, like, credit where it's due. Like, they didn't try to make me fascist or do any of the other shit that the algorithm sometimes does that people like less. So I don't know how famous he is to like normal people. I know from having toured his YouTube oeuvre that he's like, you know, he was on Letterman and like he did like the late night circuit, but I don't know what that means. Like, plenty of people were on Letterman in 1992, and I don't think anybody really remembers them as well either.
Yeah, but you don't see magicians on late night shows really anymore.
No.
I mean, even Copperfield. I mean, I guess you see Blaine when he has a special coming out.
All those guys, I feel like, had some major cancellation episode in their life.
is up with magicians? I guess it's... I mean, my instinct is to say there's an insecurity that runs through the magician community, but I don't know why any more than any other.
I think
community.
There's also a lot of like normal magicians out there that like are just, it's different. Like, David Blaine's thing was that like he needed to, like, he flew too close to the sun. If he was just out there,
literally,
like,
that was one of his stunts.
That was, and he survived it. He's amazing.
Yeah. Hold on,
take
David,
nothing
do
away
you
from
remember?
His work.
He literally did something where he was attached to a bunch of balloons and flew away. Am I making this up right now?
No, that sounds like him.
I swear to God he did that.
A lot of his stuff is like, he would do magic where he would approach someone on the street, and he's got like a sort of a sociopathic energy about him. Like, he blinks like 6 or 7 times a day. Like, he's just, it's an unsettling type of guy to be around. But those things are kind of cool where he's like, do you want to see me put a needle through my hand? And then, like, some dude that was just, like, coming out of an FHM in, like, 2005 loses his mind because he'd never seen anything like that before. That's amazing. But the, like, the stunt stuff is him being like, I'm going to get shot by a bullet. Or, like, I'm going to get drowned. Or I'm going to attach myself to a bunch of balloons and fly away into space. Which is magic, I guess, in the sense that he's alive. But it is not magic in the way that, like, I sort of want it to be. It's, like, a little bit more of a production value than I'm looking for. I'm not trying to get, like, the Criss Angel experience. Yeah. I want, like, the most expert possible version of my Uncle Philly producing a coin from behind my ear.
Well, and that's, you know? And that's what the great David Roth could do. That man could pull coins out of anywhere, which actually does remind me, quick story, the pulling the coin out of your ear is how I almost made one of my best friends in kindergarten deaf. Because we were sitting, you know, crisscross applesauce, listening to the teacher, and there were these bristle blocks. You know, they were like Lego, but they were just bristles, and you would squish them together. Mm-hmm. And so one of the little bristles was on the floor. So because I'd seen the ear trick before, I put the little bristle in the sill of his ear. And I said, hey, there's something in your ear. And then I expected him to say, what? And then I would go, here it is.
Produce it, yep.
I would, yes, prestidigitate it, if I've seen if I've seen The Prestige enough.
So I've never seen anyone say that word out loud, but I'm pretty sure that's the right use of it. So
yeah,
thank you for that.
Thank you. Yes. Anyways, but he didn't say that. All he did was go, what? And he put his finger in his ear and he pushed bristle block down. They took him to the doctor in the school. They pushed it deeper down. And then when they finally got him to the ENT specialist or whoever, they said that he was like centimeters away from deafness in one ear.
Wow.
So magic is dangerous, guys. That's why trained professionals only, please. And I'm out in LA. I've never made a public plea for this, but if you're listening to this and can take me to the Magic Castle in Los Angeles, please reach out.
So this was what I was going to say. When I was making the case for normal magicians, I went to college in LA County, and one of my friends there was a magician who performed. He'd been a magician as a kid. He performed at Magic Castle, like, in the way that I had a job at the science library on campus. Uh-huh. He would go and, like, do his set there. And as far as I know, he's never had, like, a job other than doing magic. Like, he graduated with his liberal arts degree and was like, I'm going to go to Macau and perform in a casino. And that's just, like, what he's done. Wow. It's a real, like, the Magic Castle is pretty sick, from what I recall. It was also, like, weird to go there and be like, I know this guy, actually. Like, you know the dude that, like, made that thing float? Like, I had a couple of politics classes with him, and he's very sharp. Like, it's just
But yes, you're right, because that's the Magic Castle, full of secret rooms and exclusivity, and maybe that transfers. If you have secret rooms and you keep secrets, then you will be a secretive, cancelable person. And perhaps the dark arts of magic extend to the dark arts of life. So really something to look into, Dave, but we don't have... sorry.
And if I call you Dave... That's not what this podcast is about.
That's not what this podcast is about. And I do apologize if I call you Dave. And I do admire you maintaining being a David. But I've heard you on other podcasts. You're always David.
Oh, I don't... people call me Dave in my everyday life all the time. Like, David's just my byline. And I have... Yeah, nothing. You can call
me whatever
you like, man. My middle initial is J. You can call me DJ if you'd like to try that one out.
Oh, nice. DJ. Well,
I don't think you should, though. You got a JD. You got to keep
it. I was going to say, above you, we have a Jason Doyle, and he's a JD.
Yeah.
But DJ, I know this is my podcast, but and you're a guest, but I feel more comfortable now, knowing that if I say Dave, you won't be like, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah,
Jesus
yeah.
Don't worry about it. This guy. All right, some very quick housekeeping. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/isthisgood. Send topics for future shows and Magic Castle invitations to isthisgoodpod@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. So David, Deej, the premise of the show is very simple. I'm going to give you a topic.
I didn't authorize Deej.
Yeah, you didn't. I didn't
sign off on that at all.
That's my bad. I'm going to give you a topic. You tell me if you think it's good. All right, here we go. First topic. Daniel C. asks, yard signs, are they good? So he wrote in, Hi, guys. I need a formal ruling on yard signs. I live in the back of a neighborhood in a cul-de-sac, and my next-door neighbor puts up 4 to 5 every election season. No one comes back there. They also have a yard sign about being inclusive that is permanently in their front window, and you can barely see it. I guess it's to convince the delivery person that they aren't hateful. Today, I just noticed that they have one with rainbows that says, "We will no longer be quiet," but I couldn't read the rest of it because it is behind a window covering of some sort. That's from Daniel. I don't know what, I mean, obviously you do write about politics, so I don't know if you want to take this from a political yard sign point of view or a sort of people are people, everyone is water, inspirational one. But, well, let me start by this. Have you ever put a yard sign up?
Certainly not. No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not just because I've lived in apartments for most of my life either. Like no, I think my parents started doing it after I left. I grew up in the suburbs, and so they, you know, will periodically support a candidate or whatever. And I don't tell them what to do. You know, they're in their 80s. I want them to live long and be happy. And if they want to send a message about how much they dislike Donald Trump, I'm going to support them in that. Certainly, you could send worse messages with a yard sign. Many people do. But I just think it's not... There's a bunch of things that I see people doing now that seem almost normal that... I know that yard signs existed when I was a child. I saw them. I remember growing up in New Jersey, seeing signs put up on the side of the highway, which is like not allowed, but every campaign does it. Right. And I'm fine with that. If you want to put it in like the no man's land and just like express your preference for who should be county sheriff, that's a perfect place for it because I'm going to go by quickly enough that I will just register it as someone is telling me something that I didn't ask them to tell me. And then just I'll be gone by the time I'm done thinking about it. That people putting flags on their cars is a really wild one to me now that you see every now and then. Not like in a diplomatic sort of way where like a car goes by and you're like, wow, that person is an emissary from Uganda, like here in our great city. Like this is like people flying stuff off the back like it's a boat. That's fucked up to me. Don't approve of it. And I think yard signs, it's obviously less aggressive like because there's not a car involved. I just feel like in general I appreciate the warning in some instances, but otherwise I would just as soon like imagine that you have no political opinions at all and right. just be able to drive by your house sort of unmolested by that. The one exception that I've seen that I like is, I believe, the creation of the comedian Joe Mandy, which is the "In this house we believe" sign, which is, again, it's one of those things that you... It's like... Not expressing a nasty principle, but it's the sort of thing you see in like extremely segregated liberal neighborhoods where we're like, we believe no one is illegal, like especially not any of the people that we employ to landscape our home. Like, but the Joe Mandy version, which is in the same type and the same font, that is just like, "In this house, we believe that Tony Gilroy's Michael Clayton is an underrated legal thrill ride," or some shit like that. To me,
greatest films
is fine. Yeah. If you have to put anything up, it can be that. But I'd rather nothing else, if it's possible.
Well, yeah, we had Joe on the show. We discussed his sign, but of course, his sign only works once you have been inundated with the other sign that it's based on.
Right.
So that's, I guess, one good point in the favor of yard signs is they leave the existence of parodies of lawn signs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I will say is, like, it's funny you mentioned sheriff, because if there weren't yard signs, I literally wouldn't know, because, you know, JD and I are both Canadian, that that's something you have to vote on here. And it's always like
you
some...
You shouldn't. It's ridiculous that you have to vote on it. Yeah.
I know. It's
upsetting,
like,
right?
And it seems to me that the person that wins, because who the fuck could possibly know the three people running, but it's always someone with a name that has, like, justice in it, or...
Yeah.
Yep. Like Bobby Gunn. Right. I'm Bobby Gunn and I'm running for sheriff.
Yep. Because it's not like, that's the thing with signs too, is that it is like, it's a very like American politics thing too. Because like every candidate, I mean, not anymore, but like up until like 2016, it was considered normal for candidates to have platforms. And that's kind of not the case now. Like with Bobby Gunn, it's like what you see is what you get. Like he is running on like having the same name as the object that you use to shoot a guy with. And that's like more or less how that is. New Jersey has a lot of small offices, a lot of like freeholder and stuff like that. And so those people putting signs up is the only way that you would ever know their name. I remember right. there was one, I remember seeing this at the side of a bus on a long enough trip that, like, I saw the name a bunch of times where there was a guy running for, like, a board of supervisors or some, you know, like, a lower-end job. Like, making the yard signs was probably the biggest budgetary expense on that campaign. And his name was, like, Greg Lasagna. And
so running for County Garfield.
Which, again, is, like, the sort of thing in North Jersey. It's like, that's pandering, too. That is a Bobby Gunn
move in its own right.
But I just remember seeing it out the side of the bus, where I'd be, like, kind of reading until I got car sick. And then I just look out the window and just a red sign with the word lasagna in impact font and then a smaller name above it. And I'd be like, oh, that's nice. I just sort of never got tired of it. It's like, I guess maybe these are the exceptions that prove that it's possible to make it okay.
Right. And it's funny because the judges don't get in on it. Like, I would like to vote for Janice Gavel. You know, for for justice or something like that. Well, that's her name, and she uses one. How bad could she be?
Right, she's been practicing her whole life this. I think that's important.
It's nominative determinism, really. Yeah.
Not to make you do Canadian chat if you don't want to do it, but is it, like, I know that we have too many elected offices in the United States, especially for things where, like, you shouldn't vote on a judge and you shouldn't vote on a cop because all they're going to ever run on is being meaner than the other guy. And it's like, it's a bad cycle. Are there, like, I know that there's, like, elections in Canada, like, those positions are not elected there. I hope. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, that is. Well, we don't even vote for our Senate, though the Senate is appointed, but it's not a real thing. It's just like a figurehead thing. But I know we don't vote for sheriffs. Do we have sheriffs, JD?
No, I don't think so.
No, we don't have a single sheriff in the
chiefs
whole.
Chiefs of police.
Sheriff 30 million.
Is a really perverse job. And you said you're in LA, so you are, like, in a place that is basically, like, the sheriffs in LA County are, like, a fucking gang that everyone's scared of and you can't do anything about it. Like, you can vote the guy out, but the other guy is, like, just
sorry,
a
David, let me just close my window before you go fucking DSA on me over here.
Introducing our fourth guest, Alex Villanueva, will be joining us.
He's got great Punisher tattoos that he's going to show off. So
the next is this good question is no knock warrants. Is that allowed?
All right, guys, if I disappear, it's David's fault. Hey, fucking, he is a magician. I do have a question. So you said your parents are putting one up. They live in the suburbs. Would you say that area is, in the next election, going to have more Biden signs or more Trump signs up?
It's kind of... So when I grew up, it was Republican, but it was like a version of Republican that doesn't exist anymore. Like, it was a very, like, Chamber of Commerce-y thing. The town is, like, virtually all Catholic and very white. And so it has drifted. It's now represented by the shittiest Democrat in the House of Representatives, give or take one or two guys, who's a very conservative Democrat, but is a Democrat. I think that the district went for Biden. New Jersey is a pretty solidly blue state, and this is, like, at this point, the only real conservative bastions there are, like, down at the shore, where it's sort of a lot of, like, retired police officer vibes, and then, like, the rural sort of western parts of the state. So that, like, putting a Biden sign, it's not, like, polarizing. Like, their house isn't going to get egged. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, like, I know that, like, this neighbor across the street who they love dearly is, like, going to have a Trump sign up. And then they're just going to talk about their dogs and avoid any other topics, which is for the best. Like, that is, we live in a society and that's how you keep that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but say, like, let's say, you know how your vote matters more in a swing state. JD's out in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so do you think there's anything to, if your vote matters more in a swing state, does your yard sign matter more? Like, should JD put up a yard sign? We got into this very briefly on air, but a few shows ago, but JD doesn't want to put up a yard sign.
Never.
And even though I think yard signs are stupid, I am at least asking the question, is it good for people that live in a place where most people are not of the political party you would be promoting, that they feel like, oh, other people are doing it. Maybe it is acceptable. Maybe it is good.
I mean, I can see that. I think that that is an argument that makes sense to me in the abstract. But as someone who's lived in politically, like, disputed areas, I would never do it. Like, I just don't want that. I don't, yeah. JD, what did you, catch me up on this. Like, I assume your answer is basically like, I don't want to talk about this shit with my neighbors. Is that right?
Well, it's absolutely that. And I just feel like, you know, it's like putting a single tweet on your front lawn and this is all you need to know about me.
Right.
You know?
It's called a pinned tweet, JD, for a reason.
A pinned tweet. Exactly right. And I, to be honest, David, I think I'm in a very contested area because there is one sign still. We're 8 months away from the election, and there is one sign for this election. There's still leftover Biden signs from last election, 2020. But there's one sign, new sign, and it's for Kennedy. And nobody is putting any new signs out. So I think everybody is just like holding their cards close to the vest. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to piss off anybody. But I think it's it's a kind of a working class area. There's a lot of it's multicultural. There's everybody's just staying very, very safe. And I'm one of them. And I just don't want to rock the boat. I only want to talk about my dog to my neighbors if I talk to them at all, which I don't. So,
right. I mean, I just feel like I don't think that there's any obligation to do more than that. Like, and it's, you know, if you want to vote, like, I obviously, like, I think it's important. A lot of people who are probably on the fence about whether to vote or not, we're waiting to hear what we think about it on this podcast.
yeah.
Go. And I'll say go vote. Go vote.
I mean, it's good. I just also feel like you don't have any obligation as a participant in American society to like always be out there with your shit and be like looking to talk to people about it. I mean, I just feel like that's, I mean, in some ways too, that like this is all obviously colored by the fact that the whole Trump thing is about that. It is about confronting you. It's not one yard sign. It's 10. You made them yourselves. They've got like a lot of text on it. Like anytime you see stuff like that, there's just a part of me. And this isn't just like a living in the city thing. I feel like this is like an instinct that you develop as you move through the world. It's just do not make eye contact with this person. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel at this point about like even one yard sign where I'm just like, all right, it's cool that you have an opinion. Like I'd rather, like I didn't ask for it and I don't necessarily feel like I want to know it.
Well, that's the thing though, is that the people that are the worst people, sorry, that's my opinion, but it's also correct, are the ones that are so proud to put, you know, the NRA sticker on their car, or their truck, or the Punisher logo, or the thin blue line, or the Trump sign in the front. And so even though I think yard signs are a blight and they're stupid, I wonder if there is something to the other side. And I know our side is unfortunately more nuanced, but if there's something to it. But we poll people before the show, David, and this was one of the most like lopsided polls we've ever done on the show. 90% of people said yard signs are bad, or not good, but once it's above 75%, I go from not good to bad.
Right. That is a very, that's surprising in the sense that 90% of people agree, even like a Twitter poll, 90% of people agreeing with anything is,
well, what do you mean even a Twitter poll? What are you saying?
No, well, because those
up
are
to
like,
an Ipsos?
It's right. I was going to, you didn't have, you should have had, what's it called? Quinnipiac University runs.
Yeah, we should have.
You're cutting corners here. It's very sad.
Nate Cohn does all our podcast polls. Yep. And he's doing a great job.
But I think that when people think yard sign at this point, they are thinking of like the homemade Trump sign or the like, the one that I always think of, my wife's father lives in a rural area in Maine. And there's a guy that had a Trump Pence flag up. He's had it up for years. It's like pretty beat the shit, like leaving something tacked to your garage in Maine over the course of like what's now going on like 7 winters is like, I wouldn't do it personally. I think it would be very unkind to that item to do that. But the guy got mad after 2020 and just painted over Pence's name with like black paint. Like it doesn't even look good. Like it's not the same color as the rest of the flag. But he was mad, I guess, that Mike didn't certify the other alternate slate of electors.
Okay.
And the, so
but
like anytime
he couldn't
you go by that
bear burning a flag, even that one.
Right.
So
I was
just
like, you should go out to the gallows that they built for you and get hanged. Do you even care about this guy?
Yeah. Okay, well, sorry, go ahead.
But I was going to say is that like that bit, that's where the yard sign is sort of useful. Cause like, I would never, like, to drive by that person's house, I feel like it tells you a lot about who lives there in kind of a helpful way. That, like, if I got a flat tire in front of their home, I would walk a quarter of a mile to literally anyone else's house.
Yeah. You're like, man, this person does think humans are illegal. And
yeah. Right. Not everyone. In this house, we believe, right, the exact opposite. We don't even like Michael Clayton. We got a little...
All right, let's move on to the next topic, David. Trevor S. asks, getting braces over 30, is this good? I don't know if this is something you've ever... Maybe you could start by telling us your history with orthodontistry, if any.
Thanks. No, love to. I had braces as a kid for like a decently long time. Mm-hmm. My teeth were pretty mashed up when I was little. And I didn't like it, but at the same time, I like having the beautiful straight teeth that you... I mean, your listeners can't see them, sadly.
Hop over to youtube.com/isthisgood.
Yeah, they're great. They're amazing.
If there was ever a reason... So
right. But they are, like, I'm glad of that. But I think the idea of doing that as an adult, I have, like, friends who've done it, and it seems like it is more annoying. Like, when you're a kid, it's just, like, stuff just kind of happens to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like, all right, like, I guess I have braces now. Like, this was my mom and dad thought it was a good idea. And, like, someday I'll thank them. And I do, you know, I am grateful that they did it. But the idea of, like, going in there at, you know, you're 32 years old and just being like, this is it. I'm ready to sign up for a couple of years of jaw pain so I can have the look that I want.
Right.
It's better probably because you're, you know, your brain is finished developing and you're capable of making that decision. But I, as someone who hasn't like improved any habit or any aspect of my life, basically since I was 15 years old, I don't know that I would be able to do it. So I can say that it's good, but I could also say that I'm not sure that I am hardy enough to do it myself.
Well, and I mean, not only then now do you have to go through it when you're older, but you have to pay for it now because
yes.
I assume you weren't
the
taking,
other thing.
Your parents
yeah.
weren't taking the lemonade money.
No,
they're putting it towards the neck gear.
They're like, we're going to bill you in installments from the moment you graduate from college.
And no interest. Yes. And no interest. We're not charging any interest on this.
This is actually, especially because we don't have kids. And so the idea of like, I honestly have no idea how much braces cost. And there, you could tell me any number and mm-hmm. I'd be like, wow, that's crazy. But it's like, are they $10,000? Are they $60,000? Mm. Are they $5,000? I don't know. Like any of those as an adult. Is a big commitment, it feels like.
I guess the answer is how fucked up are your kids' teeth? And that yep. will point us towards the answer. But, you know, let me let you into my brain for a second, because I sent you the link for this, you know, Zoom recording. I'm saying Zoom because that's the Kleenex of podcasting yeah. recording devices. And so you could have hopped on at any moment. And then I knew I was going to ask you this question about adults getting braces. And then I was like, holy fuck, I don't really know what David looks like that. Well, like, what if he has yeah. really fucked up teeth and he comes on asking, like, this question?
Popped out like, my Invisalign before, like taking my rings off before we fight. Yeah, no.
Hold on a second. This guy is a magician, JD. He has invisible braces. Amazing. Yes. So, yeah, but I was like, yeah, he's going to think I'm insulting him or like subtly suggesting he needs braces. But luckily, you came on and your teeth yeah. perfect, which is
thanks.
Which is good.
Appreciate it. Yeah. And yeah, while we're talking about it, I think you guys both have great teeth, too.
Oh, well, I was nice braced. Were you braced, JD?
No.
Interesting. Okay, well, would you get braces as an adult?
I would. Yeah, I would, for sure.
But your teeth are fine, right? Or at least I've certainly
well, I
never
know,
noticed
but if
anything
I,
weird about them.
If they weren't fine, I would feel fine about getting braces. As soon as I could afford them, I would get braces. I got LASIK eye surgery when I could afford it, which was when I was 45. So that lasted for 5 years, and then I needed, you know, reading glasses. So,
yeah,
but
that's
yeah,
because he got his LASIK from a Groupon. JD, tell him the
truth. I did.
Wait, did you really?
Yes, I did. But I could afford it, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's totally fine. I went to university when I was 30. I do everything late. So,
yeah.
And by the way, my kid, my youngest, has braces. And I will let you know, David mm-hmm. and Matt, that it's costing us $5,000.
Okay.
That seems
that's
reasonable.
Better.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Like, it's a lot. But I also just the way that everything has sort of spiraled in cost since I was a kid. Like, every now and then I'll get like, and again, this is if you think that yard signs are an avert your eyes situation. Every now and then I'll like see what it costs to do like one semester at a private college, paying full oh, freight God. Now, and it's like Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah.
Like, makes me want to send my parents a edible arrangement or something for. Like, the braces were fine. That's good. Like, I could pay for that. I have no idea how I would pay for a child to go to college at this point. Like, I would just have to.
I'm dealing with that, too. With my oldest is going next year, and I do only expect edibles. You can keep the arrangement. Yep. Lincoln, send me edibles.
From the college town, whatever. Just
that's right.
Weird. Yeah, that'll be nice.
And now, JD, I don't know if, did they pull this trick on you when you go to the dentist or whoever you go, the orthodontist for a consult? What I noticed is they don't say like, oh, we'll fix your mouth or we'll fix your teeth. They say, we'll fix your smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they get you, because we're always taught like, you know, that's the way that we communicate, I don't know, friendliness or mm-hmm. sociability to other people. So, because I guess fixing your teeth, like spending a lot of money, putting in a lot of effort, and it being very visible that you are fixing your teeth is perfectly acceptable. And I'm not even talking about someone who has like a jaw problem. I mean, purely aesthetically.
Right.
But yet other cosmetic surgery, very frowned upon for a 12-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
So what is it? Is it just the tyranny of the smile, or should nose jobs and, you know, breast augmentation be more common for tweens? David, we go to you.
Yeah. Oh, great. Thanks. Appreciate it. I was hoping that I would get to weigh in on this. I think with teeth, though, it's like those are the first. So those are, you have your grown up teeth by the time you're a tween, and you're going to have those for the rest of your life, more or less.
Makes
right?
a good point. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Like, that seems like the only. Certainly the idea of, like, I think there were probably people that I went to high school with that got nose jobs in high school, which, again, is, like, perfectly fine. It's their business. Like, but it is the sort of thing where I don't know that I ever gave it any thought, but there is a part of me, like, when you were saying that, I was like, oh, no, can't do that. But it is not, this is a difference in degree. It's not, or whatever, or specific type, not a difference in terms of kind. The idea
right.
is the same all the way across. I guess there's also something about the fact that it's the smile aspect, like as much as that does feel like salesmanship, because I don't imagine that, you know, there's like all these, you know, sort of the rhetoric of that. Like, I mean, I've not had my breasts done, but I don't assume that you go in there and they're like, we're going to perk up the tits. Like, I'm sure that there's like, they got some idea where they're like, we're going to give you the body that you deserve. Or
right. We're going to fix your chest smile.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's how people make first impressions. It's how people communicate.
I don't think the
idea of like that being a, you know, an unfinished thing that could sort of hold you back. Like, I know that if I hadn't, I don't know what it would have been like. I was self-conscious about my teeth when I was little because they looked weird until they were fixed, you know? And like that. I guess, like, when you know that a kid is going to be going through all the shit that 12-year-olds are going through, period, which is just, like, all the worst stuff about being a kid and the worst stuff about being an adult happening at the same time in a body that is incredibly volatile. Like, this does, in some ways, it feels like you're, like, making it worse, but I guess it's also, like, you want to take one thing that a child could be upset about out of the equation, I'd imagine. I don't know. Jamie, you're the one that's actually paying for braces right now. Like, was this even a conversation? Like, what did you guys, how did you talk about it?
It was a conversation in that his bite needed to be adjusted. So my wife basically has the same thing, and she's actually in her 40s thinking about getting braces because it affects how she grinds her teeth, and they're being like chipped away slowly. So it was kind of a no-brainer.
I had a coworker who had a similar thing, wound up getting like jaw surgery to that end. But it's like, if it's your bite, if it's like making it hard for you to do normal human stuff, then it's like, that's a, like, not a question.
Normal human stuff, like eat?
Like eating food. Like, what's more normal than that?
But, okay, but it's we gotta limit this more to cosmetic. Because obviously, like, imagine if the topic was like, I have TMJ and my life is in shambles. Right. Should I get braces over 30? And we were like, no! It's gross!
Typing this in terrible pain. Should I get out of the car wreck I was just in?
No, stay there. You made your bed, lie in it.
Right, I was going to say. You got a lot to think about, my friend.
Right. I mean, the point is well taken, Matt, because imagine Michael Strahan without the gap in his tooth, or...
He doesn't have it now, right?
Doesn't he? Did he fix it? I didn't know that.
I guess most people can imagine it, JD.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he can afford it, so he got him. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of other, like Kirsten Dunst or, you know, trademark snarly teeth, right? But, you know, she looks great.
Dr. Teeth, it looks like from The Muppets.
You're right. Gold teeth. That's cosmetic, obviously.
Oh, yeah, all right. It looks like Strahan did not fix. I was worried that he had, but I think he has not.
Well, Mike Tyson, he's got a gap, right? Well, yep. Madonna has a gap.
Oh, Madonna is the classic example. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. But in any case, it doesn't matter anymore because, like, first of all, I have a mouth guard. Mouth guard technology has improved so much in the last 5 years alone. It went from, like, a big honking thing that, like, I, you know, slurred when I spoke to, like, a barely there thin little thing that works better and I can sleep better. So it's like now in the age of the Invisalign, we're not even, you know, I don't know. It's like if you had to wear glasses, but they were invisible. Oh, right. I guess that's just contact. But, you know.
But I do wonder if like any of the real like sort of, I think I'm around the same age as you all, like that all the really draconian stuff, like the headgear where there's like a brace and a wire and a thing that pushes your jaw back, like, is that they don't need to do that anymore, right?
I don't know.
All right.
I feel like we've progressed past it.
I want to believe that the technology is better, but I also, like, I live in the world like both of you, and I know that, like, we're not, like, not a lot of things are improving, like, per se at the moment, and so there's definitely a chance that that's, like, still going on and that they haven't, like, that basically we've succeeded in making things smaller and more expensive, but not necessarily more effective or, like, otherwise better.
Well, I have to think that this is not a situation like, I don't know, windshield wipers that have been, I don't know, seemingly the same forever. I'm just saying that I got a windshield wiper problem now, David. I don't want to get into it. I have to assume it's gotten better. That was very rude of you. 63% of people said getting braces after 30 is good. And I think we all agree, so be brave, you fucking loser. Go out and get those braces. And get the metal ones with the elastics.
Hell
okay?
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
Be like the kind of braces Jack White would get if he had to get braces, you know?
Analog potentially braces. Fucking it up eating a dessert, like, then you're not getting braces.
Exactly, exactly.
You should have something that you could wreck the whole thing with, like, a sugar daddy.
We want this to be a pain-gain situation, right? Mm-hmm.
That's
so,
right.
No Invisalign, go old school. All right, Dave, moving on. When people need help navigating life's biggest decisions, they seek our wise counsel and we deliver an airtight verdict. It's time to settle this. So I'm just going to read you an email that someone emailed in. They need advice and we are going to give it to them. Hi, Matt and JD. And David. They didn't
write
that.
I was going to say, it's fine. I don't need to be mentioned.
Well, that's fine. Cheers from Austria. You guys are a key part of my Monday afternoon house cleaning routine. Couldn't do it without you guys. Well, that part doesn't refer to you, David, so maybe I shouldn't have included you. Okay, now I'll include you here. To the topic, David. I know a girl who's currently a part-time physical therapist / fitness influencer. Her other part-time job is at a corporate company where she regularly has the traditional company events like team outings and Christmas dinners and so on. She began to bring her own pre-made food in Tupperware to these events and dinners. And these were at some very fancy restaurants. Please settle this. Is bringing your own food to a restaurant acceptable behavior? I know she's on some long-term goals, but is this really the way to go? Couldn't you just schedule your meals differently? Like, check the menu, plan your other weekly meals accordingly, and then go for the best option there? I just feel like it makes it weird for everyone else, including the place you're eating at. Also, as a side note, would you ever have the guts to ask the staff to reheat your Tupperware food and serve it on a plate?
She asked them to, like, she's like, can you run this under the broiler for me?
Yeah, toss this under the salamander. I don't know
that.
That
rocks.
I don't know if she's ever done that. I think he is just theorizing, like, you know, she's already bringing the food. Presumably, if she's traveled, it might be room temperature now, you know, going the extra mile. But this is from Remo. We know what Remo thinks here. You know, he asked us to settle it, but then he threw in some things that made me think that he thinks this this chick cray, frankly.
Putting his thumb on the scale a little bit.
Yeah. But what do you think, David, about this person bringing their own healthy food to their corporate dinners?
So I just want to say right off the bat, I do agree that Remo's perspective does come through in this. I don't think that that's the reason why I am instantly, like, I was champing at the bit for you to get done reading the question so I could be like, don't do this.
Yes.
Do not.
Do not like, do this.
I think especially with stuff like this, if you've got a diet that is, like, restrictive enough, like, places will accommodate you to the extent possible. Like, if you have, like, a real dietary thing, like a like super serious celiac or whatever, mm-hmm. like, I understand that that's serious. There's places you can't go because it's unsafe. Like, I get that. If this is the sort of thing where you have some sort of like bespoke diet that either you designed yourself or that you're getting from the places where people get bespoke diets, then like
The Liver King?
The Liver King, yeah, that's a perfect example. So say there's a man, a 5'2", 275 pound, extremely venous YouTube man who's constantly just like eating a testicle in front of Joe Rogan. That's... don't listen to that person at all, period, if you can. But that, like, yeah, I think, I mean, I guess in the most abstract possible way, I respect anybody that is that sure of themselves that they're going to go into a restaurant with their coworkers at a nice restaurant and be like, I brought my own mush. It's a protein mush that I use to keep my coat glossy or whatever. Good for them, but, like, no, I don't think so. I'm also, like... a bit of a I don't know if I'm like a priss about restaurants. I'm like a people pleaser about stuff like this. Like, I wouldn't want to inconvenience them because they're working so hard to make me something nice. But like, I think if I found like something in something I ordered that I didn't like, I would, the first thing out of my mouth would be like, sorry, but there's a bug in this. Like, that's more or less the way that I've like rewired my understanding of the power dynamics there. So I'm like offended for that reason as well.
Yeah.
And you know, this part-time physical therapist slash fitness influencer would be so indignant if you said to her like, hey, maybe don't bring the braised bok choy.
Yeah. Everybody hates it. It makes us all upset. And I say this as a friend, but like when you do it, we all get really mad at you.
Yeah, she'd be like, well, that's why you're all fat slobs that are gonna die by 58. Yep. Okay, you don't want to better yourself, you don't want to improve your life, and
I have 13,000 followers and a sponsorship with this supplement. It's a testicle, it's a pill, it's a gel cap, and it has all the nutrients that you get from eating testicles. Yeah.
And that's 13K on Instagram, okay? But it's 1 million on TikTok. You know what I mean? I was like, when people on Instagram tell you how many followers they have on TikTok.
Thanks.
But yeah,
that's
this
a really big number. Really.
It's a big number. It must be really easy to get people to listen to your harebrained schemes over there. Yeah, it's obviously it's like a allergy versus preference, David, which you were talking about. Like, if you have celiac or you're going to die if you eat the peanut, then certainly don't eat the peanut just because the restaurant says that that's
not to be rude.
You know what the dish goes best with. But if it's just preference, like I've had this problem with kosher style people, you know. So like we'll be going to a big group of eight people and one person's, you know, kosher style, meaning they could still eat the food. But they just can't have like a cheeseburger or maybe they don't eat meat. But if there's a as long as there's one dish you can eat, then I'm sorry, but you have to shut the fuck up. Because otherwise you are changing seven other people's plans. Because why? Because you had fish tacos last week and you don't want to eat fish tacos again tonight. There's fish tacos. Yeah.
There's
and
like
a salad.
Degrees
you're
of,
fine.
There's degrees of that too, but also like if you're at a position where you're like you're not capable, you're not going to eat in a non-kosher, like anything that comes from a non-kosher kitchen, then like you shouldn't go to a restaurant that, like, I guess if that is almost one of those things where I could sort of make an allowance for it, but also like because I'm not kosher and because I don't know anyone that's that level of being orthodox, there's a part of me that's just like, well, you're just being annoying, like, which is unfair. Like, really, you just have a better relationship with our vengeful Old Testament deity than I do?
Right.
But, yes. Please don't mention his name because he might be the next guest on this podcast.
Wow, Joe Mandy, me, and Hashem. Huge.
Our Lord Adonai. I mean, the other thing is, okay, so let's say you have a person in your life that is vegetarian. Maybe you don't take them to the Brazilian churrascaria, right? Because that's just rude. But I think for this person, they'll never be satisfied because you could take them to a restaurant where there's plenty of options. They're still going to be bringing their own food because they like packing your own suitcase. They know exactly what's in it.
Right.
And they know how much sodium and the macros and this and that. So I don't think this person will ever be satisfied. So it doesn't matter where you take them. They think that because they are doing something good for themselves, how could you have any quarrel with them being healthy and living longer? And the answer is that you're annoying and you're ruining the whole point of dinner.
Yep. I think that's right.
Yeah.
It would be one thing, especially if you were like, I have a bunch of dietary restrictions. Could you make me something that's like X, Y, or Z? Places will do that.
Yes. You know, right? You can make the request, but I think you also have to be willing for them to say substitutions no. Politely declined.
Yes. Yeah. Depends how fancy the place is that you're going, I guess. But the... Like, either way, just this person, the idea of, I'm also thinking of, like, what a fancy restaurant in, I'm assuming this person is in Vienna, because that's the only place in Austria that I know of, really. The idea of just going to some, like,
okay,
super
so you think they're not
style,
in Innsbruck.
Is that bad?
I don't know. I know it's a mountainous region.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very nice.
A lot of fondue, probably. This chick's not going to be eating fondue, I'll tell you that.
Yep. One restriction. I don't like heated up cheese goose. Anything you could...
Can I have the raclette without the heated up cheese?
Right. Is there a vegan version of this that you could do for me?
All right. So now that we've settled that, on to the next thing. David, you've been on the internet writing about it, experiencing it forever. So you know that people are always trying to tell you how to live your life. So it's time That's to true. Decide if they know what they're talking about in Is This a Good Rule? So I'm going to read you some rules I found on the internet and inspired by the question we just had about etiquette in restaurants that got me thinking about general dining etiquette. I found a list comes from Food and Wine magazine, and the article is called 11 Fine Dining Etiquette Rules You've Probably Been Breaking Your Whole Life. Just so you know, this isn't coming from, you know, some Johnny come lately. The expert that's giving these rules, her name is Mika Mayer. She's the founder of Beaumont Etiquette and the Plaza Hotel Finishing Program. She trained in London under a former member of the royal household of the Queen. And JD, you're going to be excited about this, served as a consultant for Downton Abbey.
Ooh.
Okay. I know you're a big Downton head, so maybe you'll recognize some of these rules.
Oh, yeah.
David, I'll read you the rule. You tell me if you think it's a good one.
All right.
All right. Rule number one, never lift your menu off the table.
Wow.
Okay, I'll read you what Mika says here. In formal dining, the menu should always be touching the table in at least one place. So if you're looking at the menu, make sure to have the bottom or at least one part of it still touching the table, even if your impulse is to bring it closer to your face. So what the... So she's saying if you can't read... Like JD, you just said you need to wear glasses to read.
Mm-hmm.
So what is she suggesting? Rather than bring the menu closer to your face, bring your face closer to the table? That doesn't
sound right. That's exactly right. I'm going to tell you this right now. I love this rule.
Why?
I love it. Because the purpose of it, I'm assuming, is that you're never blocking your face. So you're always making eye contact with the people that you are having dinner with.
Okay, then let me ask you another question, JD. So if you're drinking a pint at dinner, do you bring the pint to your mouth or do you leave it on the table and crouch over like a little baby bird?
It depends on how full it is. It depends on the meniscus.
Yep. Okay, so if it's too full, if the Guinness head is at the top of the glass, you'll lap it up
like
before.
Absolutely.
Video, like have you ever seen Bone the cat drink water like that?
Okay. All
right.
David, does this strike you as a good rule?
No.
Part of the menu must
not
be touching the table?
I'm honestly, like, in awe of the fact that it is a rule. Like, I love that this is the sort of, like, it's like, this is the one that you see people breaking all the time. And I would have expected, it's like, you're holding your fork wrong. I probably am. I don't know. No one told me how to do that. But the idea of being like, you should never read the menu. Like, just,
yeah, that's right. It's it's all you know, chef's choice omakase prefix style, because it's a formal dinner. So what do you even? It just says, you know, it doesn't even say what's in the dish. It just says, like,
you need to establish dominance right off the bat. So as soon as you go into a formal restaurant, take out a Tupperware of food that you've prepared.
Oh, interesting. You're giving the sort of you know, punch the biggest guy in prison in the nose on the first day.
Yeah, you gotta show him who's boss. Order something off the menu, see if they'll make it. Maybe they won't. But if they will, then you know that you're in charge. You probably won't have to pay.
They're your bitch forever.
Yeah, this is the...
That's now your personal chef.
That said, I'm kind of sympathetic to JD's idea of it not being the sort of thing where, especially like formal dining, I feel like this has changed because like now if you go to like a really fancy restaurant, they'll give you a menu and it's like, maybe it's big, but it's not like a lot of pages. There's not a lot of stuff there. Or it's like just a little piece of paper with just the names of different items on it.
Yes.
You have to guess because it's going to be like mushroom, pork, oak.
Sumac.
And you're like, what? And that's fun. I mean, I like going to places like that, but it is like you're guessing.
Yeah, totally.
But the idea of like, I guess you could like lever it on the table and then sort of like be doing both. But it does feel hard. It also is like I'm a little embarrassed by it, just given how much of my youth was like either going to a restaurant with my parents where it's just like some massive Italian pizzeria style menu that looks like a phone book, or you're going to a diner where the thing is like sticky and heavy and weird and there's like a whole page that's just like things that no one would ever order. They're like from the raw bar and you're like, no, I don't know, like I don't think I trust you to do that. I've just been looking at the wrong menus more than I've been looking at them the wrong way.
Mm. No, but you know how you're right. Sometimes you get the auxiliary from the raw bar menu that's just a tiny square that's like paper clipped to the larger rectangle or something. You should be allowed to pick that one up at least.
Yeah.
You know? That's okay. Because you have to, because you got to separate it. All right, next rule here. Once you sip from a glass, you must sip from the exact same place on that glass for the rest of the evening. Huh. So here Mika says, when you drink, you want to drink from the same place of the glass every time to avoid that lip ring. Whether it's from, and of course, you're going to be saying, of course, here. Whether it's from natural oils or chapsticks or lipsticks. And then put the glass back in the same place where you picked it up. So... let's go to you first on this one, JD, since you're so proper and prim.
Yeah. Do you like this one too?
Yeah.
Do you like this one too?
I fucking love this. I love this. I love it. Because it's exactly right. There's nothing grosser than lips and just marks from humanity around an entire glass. It's just a one single
unless
spot.
Unless you're collecting forensics. How are you seeing the lip marks on someone else's glass?
You see them. You definitely see it.
Well, you know, I'm a big Burt's Bees boy. I stay Bees all the time. So I'm marking up a glass like crazy.
Mm-hmm. But you can't really see it very well here. I drink I drink water all day long, not to brag. Mm-hmm. And by the time I put this glass in the dishwasher at the end of the day, it is covered in fingerprints. It's like a million children were drinking from it. It's embarrassing, but you do notice that, like that many, like it does kind of add up. This is one that I never would have thought of. I'm going to think that all of these are incredibly prissy, but I also like the idea of trying to do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like as a weird, like, little practice. Be like, I'm going to do the best possible job drinking this. I'm going to put it down. I'm going to look
the best job.
Because, you know, like, you want to impress the people at the restaurant. Like, I've established that this is like, I'm basically there auditioning for, like, if I do a really good job, they'll be like, would you like dessert? You
know, exactly.
We don't typically offer. We have an off menu dessert. Right.
Yes.
Ooh, a promotion.
Yeah. But I was going to say, it does have that. Feeling to it. Are you completely opposed to this one, Matt? Is this like
I think these are all insane. I was going to say that like in the last email that we responded to, that person was ruining the fun of dining and the communal aspect of dining by being rude and bringing their own stuff. But fine dining experts ruin the fun and community of dinner by being like, you must think about every single thing you are doing. That relates in no way to conversation. Like, arguably, I would say the most important part of a dinner. I mean, maybe, I guess food, but the most non-food important part of dinner. And they're basically saying, like, how can we make this as stuffy and boring and pretentious as possible? And I think you can go to a fancy place without, you know, okay. Like, next rule here. perfect. Do not ever clink, not even for the gram. Clinking for Cheers could damage the glass, especially if you're using fine glassware. Plus, in very formal dining, the less noise we make, the better. So when you're royal and you have all the money in the world and you can do whatever you want, you have to have the least fun dinners ever?
That seems fair.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, it's fair for us.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem fair to them.
We commoners in our tavern swashing around our tankards of ale.
Like Gaston whatever we style. Want.
Right, yeah, basically, yes. We're singing a song about Gaston at dinner every day. That's
the Queen,
normal for
Queen
me.
Would never. Say, yeah. Even if it was as catchy a song as Gaston, she would never raise her voice in unison.
That all the things we're singing about Gaston are true. You just don't talk about it at a royal table.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right.
Did you hear about Gaston? Quite impressive fellow.
Yes.
But there's a time and a place. I like this.
Oh my God. You're really. You are the least pretentious person in the world. And I don't know if you're doing this just to piss me off, but explain why you like this.
It's a great bit either way. Just being a 19th century guy, like you're otherwise totally normal, but this is the one thing where you're like, no, you should never be. You wait until the Lord has eaten. Lord of the manor.
Oh, the guy from fucking that looks like he should be on Sons of Anarchy has some opinions on fine dining. Please go ahead.
You should never have told me that she consulted on Downton Abbey because I'm going to agree with all of them. I'm going to agree with all of them.
That checks out. Yes.
Okay. Let's get to one more here. Place the discards only on the upper left side of your plate. Okay, so she says the upper left side of your plate is for discards. Let's say you had a lemon rind and you didn't want to eat it. That goes on the upper left-hand part of the plate because the bottom right is for sauces and butter, as we all know. Now, I'm going to come on and say this is a good rule because then if you're putting the discards always in the same place, then the server will know, okay, you're done now.
Right.
I just feel bad about never having noticed any of this. Like, the lower right hand... Say the part about the sauces and butter again.
Huh. JD, he's admitting that he didn't know where the sauces and butters go.
Yeah.
I thought and the butters were in separate quadrants. But I guess they're all in bottom right.
We do it differently
By the way, what
New
goes
Jersey.
Top right? What goes top right? What goes bottom left?
So the way that
crumbs bottom left...
Where I grew up was basically the entire plate is covered in baked ziti, and then you just yell at each other the entire meal about the Jets.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if fine dining has any opinions on which part of the Pyrex certain things should go in, but
this has the same sort of appeal to me as the always put your lips in exactly the same place on the glass thing, in the sense that it's like it's a totally meaningless discipline that you can sort of like practice. And, you know, in your head, you're like, iron sharpens iron. No one's ever been better at this than me. You know, like, remember, that's what you need to keep yourself interested. Especially because I imagine at the highest levels, it's like you can't talk at dinner because the queen is there.
Right.
Like, I guess it's like whatever it takes to divert yourself from that experience, I guess you got to do.
All right. Well, you know, as a last one, JD, I'm going to ask you this as a quiz because you're so on the same page as this person.
Oh, God.
If you are at a dinner and you have to use the restroom. Okay. Should you politely excuse yourself and say you have to use the restroom, or should you say nothing and just go to the restroom?
I would say just say nothing. Just go. You don't want to bring up
correct.
Toilet talk.
You're correct. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It says if you have to leave to use the restroom, do not say why you're leaving. I guess that's fine. I guess you don't want to
say... Do you say excuse me, or do you just like... Just get up.
Like a D-line.
Say excuse me in a way that connotes you got to really curl one out, you know? Like, oh, excuse me.
The polite move is to get really panic, stand up and go, uh-oh, and then run out of the room as quickly as you can.
Okay, fine. And then the last one, JD, should you finish your plate? Out of a sign of respect for how good the cooking was? Mm-hmm. Or should you leave a bite on your plate to show that there was an abundance and you didn't need as much as your gracious host gave you?
The latter.
right again.
Wow.
Yeah. Leaving one bite on your plate shows you enjoyed the meal, but you weren't so famished you cleaned the whole plate, which could indicate that you are still hungry and that it wasn't enough food. David, you got a lot to learn.
I really do. Is this what Downton Abbey is like?
Oh, yeah.
Is this what the show is like? There's like, you see the front of the house and then the back of the house. People are like, cleaned his plate, he did.
That's exactly right.
JD's keeps pausing it, going, elbowing his wife, saying, you see how he left a bite on his plate? You see how he did that?
Only guy watching it with a telescreener. You're like, freeze it. All right.
Enhance.
I like this guy. He said, I call him.
You see how in
the
first
beef finisher,
the first few bites of the roast beef, he was loving it. He was enjoying it. Yep. So you'd think he couldn't wait to finish it. But now you see here in the bottom, in the top left corner of the plate, he's left one bite of beef.
Just hooting like Tony Romo as someone moves the lemon to the top right of the plate. Uh-oh, Jim.
All right, David, there's only one very quick thing left to do, and that's play subjective trivia. So subjective trivia, it's just like regular trivia, except only I know the answer. So you have the fun bag, which is essentially a mailbag style thing where people will write you in, and it's a universally loved bit, and you will answer their question. So one question you had recently was, someone asked you to name some of the most universally loved celebrities. Do you remember how you answered that question?
In a stupid way, which was by detailing a bit that I've been R&Ding here in the apartment, which is pretending not to like Paul Rudd to annoy my wife. Everybody loves Paul Rudd. He's amazing. Like, it just seems like the funniest, nicest dude. He's good in everything he's in. But the idea, he was the first guy that I thought of as universally liked. And then I thought because of that, it would be a funny bit to be like, every time he comes on screen, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, fucking Ant-Man. Are you serious?
Christ.
Yeah.
The
guy from
Stepbrother and Clueless? He's still around?
Yeah. Wow. You know, he looks like he hasn't aged at all. That's always cool when you see that. Yeah. And it's hard. It's honestly like kind of hard to do. Like he's, there were some other good answers in the comments under.
Okay, but don't say any of them. Don't say any of them.
Well, I won't.
Here's
it's
the
like,
question.
Even there, though, a lot of them were like, no, I know people who don't like that guy. Or there are very, very few.
Perfect. Because that's today's question. Which of these universally loved people is probably the worst?
According to you.
According to me. Okay, so I have my answer written here on this card, so you know I'm not cheating. The goal is to get our answers to line up. Here are your options. Universally loved people. Which of these is probably the worst? Dolly Parton, Tom Hanks, The Rock, or Betty White? Again, that's Dolly Parton, Tom Hanks, The Rock, or Betty White. You can consult with JD as he's an expert in getting in my head.
Yeah. Walk me through, what are we dealing with here? Because I feel like I can see ways through to almost all of these answers.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, go
well,
ahead.
I think I know the answer. I think the answer is The Rock.
Yeah.
Just based on clues that Matt has left behind his entire life.
You've been profiling him from day one. You're like, yeah, this guy.
He's never been able to
smell what he's cooking. He's never cared for it.
I've been trying to Slumdog Millionaire you your whole life into getting this one trivia question about a person that I've never really talked about. But okay, go on.
Well, but you have talked about him, David. We do a podcast about the Fast and the Furious, and Matt has guested on it. Four times.
That's true.
And so true. There have been, I wouldn't say outright contempt, but some snide comments along the way. Let's just go through the other list. Dolly Parton, no fucking way it's Dolly Parton.
Yeah, nobody's mad.
No
at
way.
That was one where people in the comments were sort of like, that was the one they struck out on.
Right.
Like, I think there's other, with like Tom Hanks, it's like crazy people hate him.
Right.
Because they're convinced that he's like, the reason why 5G makes their kids not want to call them back or whatever.
Yeah.
But like Dolly Parton, even then, I think everybody's kind of like, oh, whatever. I'm going to be mad at that.
Yeah. Betty White, I think universally loved and also famously a nice person, but I actually don't know much about Betty White, to be honest. And then Tom Hanks. Yeah, you're right. Crazy people don't like him, but he's generally America's granddad, right?
Yeah.
And
he's like considered a mensch too, like just generally, like better to people than someone as famous as him would be expected to be?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So your answer is I'm saying
Rock. The Rock, David, but you know, I have a lifetime of experience here.
Yeah, The Rock was my first instinct to just in the sense that I think that all of those other people have this veneer of being kind of like generous in the way that like you, I mean, nobody knows what any of these guys are actually like, you know, like Tom Hanks is Chet Hanks came from Todd Tom Hanks.
That's
like
these great things. Point. It's a great point.
Can't
tell. Anything is possible.
Yeah, but The Rock is always like, there's been that kind of like stagecrafty element to it that just comes with coming up through wrestling that he seems like the most artificial of them. So even though any of them, I can see why they would be as widely liked, it does feel like he'd be the normal pick. But I don't know how normal a guy I'm talking to.
Yeah, but we're about to find out.
Well, we're about to find out. Well, it did come down to two.
Okay.
The Rock and Tom Hanks. And I guess I'm loco because my answer was Hanks.
Wow.
Spelt
you
the way he signs all his tweets. He's the reason we all got COVID. You know it. I know it.
So one of my favorite former coworkers, Sean Newell, who I worked with at Vice Sports, hated Tom Hanks. And it wasn't a bit, and we all treated it as a bit, and he'd be like, stop joking around about this. Like, I don't... And a lot of it was grounded in the fucking H-A-N-X spelling. He was like, that's not dignified. I don't approve of that.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, the typewriters, the finding gloves.
Yep.
I've seen some blind items that perhaps he's not as American sweetheart as we would think he is. Yep. I've seen him yelling at some people.
My wife listened to a podcast that was built around. You familiar with the Dead Eyes podcast? You ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
So, yes. My wife listened to it, and this is like a guy who. It became a successful podcast, but it was an actor who had auditioned for and won a part in Band of Brothers and then was cut from the production by Hanks because Hanks reportedly was like, he's got dead eyes, get him out of here. And then so
that's
where the
X in Hanks comes from.
Yes. But the arc of the podcast is basically like this guy trying to figure out, first of all, am I a good actor? Was Hanks right? Do I suck? And then like working his way back to Hanks, who I believe he does actually talk to and of course comes off very charming in the end. But yeah, it's... If he's willing to describe somebody, it's, you know, like a baseball scout who says that somebody has a slow bat is not saying that that person's an asshole. They're giving a professional assessment. Still, it's not nice. I can see your way through to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's, Hanks, you're fooling everyone else, but you ain't fooling me.
Wow.
Something's going to come out about you. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but
yeah,
it will, and I will be there. All right, David, go ahead. I was just going to ask you to promote your stuff and tell people where they can find it.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Wow. I'm very happy to do that. Defector.com is the website. That's the one I do with a bunch of other people I used to work with at Deadspin and then other people that we have hired since. It's a pay site, but you know, so you get a few stories for free. It's pretty good. I am biased, but it's a great work experience for me. We do the distraction through that, me and Drew McGarry, and I do a Hallmark podcast with Jeb Lund, where we watch Hallmark movies and talk about them. It's Christmastown. And those are the things that I do mostly.
Is that a seasonal podcast or that goes year round?
I mean, it's Hallmark, so it's kind of seasonal in the sense that we're always talking about Christmas movies. It's like intermittent. Like, I think it's, you know, when we have the time to do it, we do it. So it's not the sort of thing where you're going to get like a fresh episode every Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to think that that makes it more fun when you randomly get one after 5 weeks of there not being an episode.
Have you done any of the Hanukkah ones they're starting to come out with?
Yeah, we just... So the one that came out
like Lights
today,
and Latkes or some shit like that?
We did with... yes, with Mark Quint and Charles Starr. This one is called Round and Round, which is a dreidel thing.
Wait, this came out today? Or
no, the episode came out today. The movie came out Hanukkah. Sorry. This is, again, I'm saying the production timeline is not...
He's like, also, wish you wouldn't keep focusing on the one thing that is sort of the least frequent of the things I'm trying to promote here, but...
Yeah, it's not like locked in. The episode came out today. But the Hanukkah ones have gone, they've improved a lot. The first time that I saw a Jew in a Hallmark movie, they treated him like Jeff Bridges in Starman. Like, he just didn't know what anything was. Like, he was completely an alien.
Tree? They're like, you haven't seen trees before?
The plot of the episode, or the title of the episode, is he didn't know what a hammer was, because that is a thing that he did not, he goes to a hardware store and a guy's like banging in a nail and he's like, wow, what is that? I live in New York.
I thought you meant like he wouldn't know what like Christmassy things were like.
No, he
like
didn't know what Christmas things were either, but it was like, this is, so they started from absolute zero, where they were like, Jewish people are like... like C-3PO would be an example, I guess, think of. Like, just human-shaped, but not people. And then by the time you get to this one, it's like the people are actually kind of like bantering like Jews. The lead in it is a Canadian comic named Val Michaelis, who I had not seen before, but who's very funny. And it's like, so they are clearly like letting non-evangelical Christians into the writer's room for some of these movies, and the Hanukkah movies have improved for that reason, I think. But when it was like the Hallmark vision of like, what is a Jewish guy like, and they were like, dark hair, New York City, I got nothing else, what else? those were wild times.
That's right, people. Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Transparent, those aren't enough representations of Jews on TV. We're coming for your Christmas movies too.
Finally, an opportunity for Jews to make it in show business.
That's right. Perfect. Remember to check us out, patreon.com/isthisgood. Subscribe everywhere. Send me an email, isthisgoodpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks to David. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
I have to say, one of our most thoughtful guests.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Wait, people are usually dumber than this?
Well, we had Joe Mandy on.
All right. Fair enough.
Thanks in advance.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
No, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks in advance for leaving a 5-star review for everyone. I'm Matt Austin, and this was Good. We'll see you next week.